Hey everyone, welcome to Preparing for the Future, overcoming barriers and empowering primary care clinicians in HIV prevention, a Let's Stop HIV Together and PrimeMed podcast. Now, there have been many advances in HIV treatment and prevention, and despite the recent decline in numbers of new HIV infections and increase in PrEP uptake, we continue to see groups of people who are disproportionately affected by HIV. My name is Dr. Anu Hazra. I'm an assistant professor in the section of infectious disease and global health at the University of Chicago, director of STS services at the Chicago Center of HIV Elimination, and a clinical ambassador for CDC's Let's Stop HIV Together campaign. I'm joined by my fellow CDC clinical ambassador, Dr. James Simmons. Dr. Simmons is a board-certified acute care nurse practitioner, a frontline healthcare provider, and a clinician behind the popular Ask the NP, Here to Help You're Healthy, as seen and heard on several television and radio outlets. In partnership with the Let's Stop HIV Together campaign, a part of the national Ending the HIV Epidemic initiative, we have developed this podcast episode for the PrimeMed audience and other practicing clinicians. Today, we'll discuss some barriers to HIV care and prevention, as well as provide information and resources for primary care providers to help address them. So let's introduce Dr. Simmons. Dr. Simmons, I'm so happy to have you and get to know you a little bit better as well. So tell us a little bit more about yourself and how an acute care nurse practitioner and sort of critical care has sort of interfaced and came into the world in the field of HIV.
Yeah, Dr. Hazra and PrimeMed and CDC and everybody, thank you so much for having me. I'm really, really excited to be here. I love talking about this. So this is going to be very exciting. I'm an acute care nurse practitioner. So I'm a critical care guy, right? An ICU guy. But early on in my nursing career, I really interacted a lot with HIV patients who have HIV who ended up in the hospital, and a lot of them with opportunistic infections, and they didn't know about their HIV status, and a lot of those folks were from communities that I represented or where I'm from. So I identify as queer, I'm biracial, I grew up in the hood, right? And talking about HIV, especially in the Black community, is just not something we did a lot. And so, you know, fast forward to my I'm in nurse clinical training and I'm a bedside RN. I'm working in, you know, parts of the west and south side of Chicago, and I'm seeing patients show up who are in their mid-20s or 30s, not knowing that they have HIV and they're dying, right? They're in those critical care units. And I was like, okay, wait a minute. We got to stop this before we get there, because there's no reason for this happening. So it really fueled a passion and a desire to, of course, get my critical care bug at work, but then also really do prevention in communities that I represent and that I'm from and that I really care about, as a public health sort of thing. So it's scratching that public health itch in me.
Yeah, no, that's excellent. I mean, I think it's such a great example of how HIV prevention runs the gamut, right? It's not just ID docs, it's not just sexual health docs or folks that, you know, see or can take part in HIV prevention. It's really all clinicians, all patient-facing, you know, providers can play a major role in how they think about HIV, destigmatizing the illness, and talking about prevention and treatment in the best way. So I think that's such a great example of how we're all in this together and really how we can all stop this together as well.
Yeah, I very much agree. And I know we're gonna eventually talk later on about how everyone should be talking about HIV prevention health in all of their interactions with patients in the sort of, you know, status neutral kind of approach that we have right now.
Yeah, love it. So I know you have a very widely popular program, Ask the NP. Can you share us a little bit more about how you use social media to share information on HIV prevention and reach different audiences?
Yeah, you know, identifying as queer and Black, and I, 10, 12 years ago when I started this whole journey, I didn't really see a lot of people who looked or sounded like me or were from where I was from talking to us in the media and in social media about health, about HIV prevention and care, of course, but then also just about everything, right? So you were hearing a lot about, like, oh, there's disparities in the Black community, and oh, we need more Black physicians and nurses and nurse practitioners and things like that. But I didn't see anybody Black on TV or in social media talking about it. So I took my old past, which is in broadcast journalism, and married it with my new, you know, my new career of being a nurse practitioner. And I was like, hey, everybody's got a YouTube page. This is like pre-Instagram, right? So everybody's got a YouTube page. I can start this. So I just threw my phone in front of me and started talking about stuff that a lot of people were really uncomfortable talking about. Sexual health. Why is my poop green? You know, what do I do with this boil on my penis? Like, things like that, right? And it kind of took off. And I realized that there was, people not only want to talk about some of these uncomfortable things, or at least hear about them, but they want to hear about them from faces that look and sound, you know, that they can sort of resonate with and that identify with. So that exploded into this whole thing. And now here we are 10, 12 years later, and there's, you know, TV and radio and blah, 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 and all this stuff. But one of the things I think I'm maybe the most proud of is my dissertation work was on understanding if social media can be used as a tool to increase oral HIV prophylaxis uptake in 18 to 35 year old cisgender men who have sex with men. And I used CDC resources for that and really leaned into the CDC and in my research and what I could do. And then the 360 of that was the CDC then reached out afterwards and they were like, hey, Dr. Simmons, now that you're Dr. Simmons and you're done with all your work, let's do this campaign, right? Let's get you on board as a clinician to educate other clinicians and folks about HIV prevention initiatives, particularly in the communities that you really care about. And that I feel like that's sort of like, that's what the good of social media, right? Like, everyone can get out there and you can tell me what you had for dinner, but being able to really affect change in people's lives and educate is my passion for it.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's all about, you know, reaching populations where they're at and reaching people where they're at, and where they're getting the information is not from, you know, news articles they're getting mailed to their door. They're getting it through their phones and these types of apps, and having reliable, good information that you're able to provide, I think is so important and really important for, other Black and brown youth that are looking for voices like them, that, you know, sound like them, look like them, and able to give, you know, again, quality, reliable information that's backed by the CDC and these other sort of institutions is amazing to distill that down to them.
Absolutely. Yeah, it really, social media can be used for good. I promise y'all listening.
Yeah.
Don't be scared of it.
There's always two sides to a coin. So, but
that's true. Awesome. Yeah. Yeah.
And so, you know, let's talk a little bit about HIV and stigma. So, there's been a lot of progress made to bring HIV awareness and prevention to the forefront. You know, both of us have been doing this for years. However, there's still some people, and some will argue that there's many people with negative attitudes and beliefs about HIV, as well as about people living with HIV. So what must we do as a public to reduce the stigma associated with HIV in so many communities? How do you think about this overwhelming problem?
It is overwhelming, right? I think that's the first thing that you can't, what's a good corporate slogan? You can't boil the ocean, or I don't know, whatever, right? You guys know where I'm going with this. I think things like this, right? I think things like this, like PrimeEd saying, okay, let's get a nice short and, well, you know, I talk too much, so this won't be super short, but a nice short and sweet podcast for clinicians that they can listen to in the car on their way to work. That just is like, hey, here's some tidbits, here's some clinical pearls about how you can start having great conversations about HIV with your patients, right? And the guidelines about, you know, all sexually active adults and adolescents need to have this type of conversation and recommend HIV prevention, those things. So I think things like this, I think talking about it removes the stigma, right? So I think if you're at dinner and you're like, I am blown away, Dr. Hazard, at how many people, mostly cisgender heterosexual folks who don't know about PrEP, and they're like, wait, there's a pill or a shot that you can take that's 95 to 99% effective at preventing HIV through sex. Yep, sure is. And it works like charm, and it's been around for a while, and we've been researching, and it is causing rates of, you know, there's reasons we're saying things like ending the epidemic, and that's not, you know, a load of, you know what. It's true. Yeah. Like, we can because we have the science. So I think just having conversations about it, I think the more people who are out there talking about this, HIV negative, HIV positive, doesn't really matter. Status is no one else's business. But talking about it and having real conversations about it, that leads to things like integrating it into education, right? So we're not waiting until you're a third year resident and you happen to come across a patient in your ICU who's got, you know, pneumonia or whatever that you've never seen before. That's not the first time you're having an HIV conversation if you're a physician. The first time you're having an HIV conversation about HIV prevention and care is when you're a second or third year student, right? Same thing with nurses, same thing with lay folks. So I think I have a little bit of that approach of just like, get it in people's faces, right? And then we start to remove the stigma of these things when it becomes something that people are used to, and they hear about it so much, and then they're not scared to talk about it.
Yeah, and you mentioned sort of status neutral earlier, and I think that's exactly the approach to help destigmatize this illness. It's what PrEP has allowed us to think about is, you know, even the playing field, it doesn't matter what your status is, that there's a plan for you to keep you healthy. So let's learn about how to keep you healthy. And I think PrEP offers so much of that in terms of helping, again, really reduce and take away that stigma around intimacy with people living with HIV, being close with people with HIV, thinking about serodiscordant relationships, serodifferent relationships. I think PrEP has done a lot of work in helping that in the past decade, but there's still so much work to be done because I feel like a lot of these attitudes are sort of ingrained in people over the past four decades. And so it takes a lot to unlearn so much of what even young folks have misperceptions or misconceptions sure. About the illness.
Sure. And I think that, you know, for those listening, and this is, you know, we're all clinicians, right? Or primarily clinicians listening to this, that I think there's a little bit of an imposter syndrome around HIV with folks who are not in specialty HIV care, right? So I work in the community. I work in a fairly large community hospital that's a level 2 trauma center. So it's a little bit different in the community, but I trained in academic environments. I've worked in academic environments. And I know that, like, oh, someone comes in and they have eyebrow pain. Okay, you call the eyebrow team, right? Yeah. And the eyebrow consultants come over and, well, right, there's a consultant for everything. Yeah. And that's just sort of how us, at least internal medicine and primary care folks, that's sort of how we learn to operate. Like, we're good at what we do, but then when it's out of our league, you better call the kids a specialist, right? You better call ID. You better call whoever. Yeah. That's not the case. I'm giving you permission now, clinicians listening. Like, that's not the case when it comes to, particularly in primary care, when we're talking about HIV prevention and care and sexual health, it is our world. And you don't need to know a ton about it. You don't need to be the HIV ID doc on service that week to have a robust conversation about your patients, with your patients about HIV prevention. And we're going to teach you how to do that here in the next few minutes.
Yeah. And I think that sort of leads right into, like, sort of the next question is, I think a lot of clinicians cite the reason, one might be they're not familiar with the drugs, which we're going to talk about how easy it is, honestly. And I always make a joke with my, you know, primary care friends. It's like, you know, preventing HIV and treating HIV is easier than treating diabetes by far. Like, it's so much easier than that. But I think what is oftentimes a major obstacle or barrier is talking about sex. Talking about sexual health and talking about that in the context of HIV. How do you get the conversation started with your patients, and how do you get that going?
Yeah, it's tough, right? I mean, it is tough to have a conversation, particularly when someone might be in your clinic, in your office, right? And they're like, I'm here for this wound on my calf and I sprained my knee and my A1C is back up to 7. And you're like, okay, so what in the heck does this? But this person might also be 47 years old, sexually active. Like, right. It's hard to sort of bring that up. And I tend to like to throw it back to on me, right? And just say, hey, we are doing this thing. Like, I don't know if you've heard about this really great science about HIV, but everybody who is out there, and I'm a pretty casual guy, even with my patients. Yeah. So everybody who's out there in the streets having sex, yeah. We're telling everybody about this. These are literally the new guidelines. So I know we're here for your knee and your A1C and the wound on your calf, and I'm going to address all that. But, like, while I gotcha, actually, Barb, you know, you and I have never talked about your sexual history. So I just want to let you know that there's a pill, you know, there's a shot, et cetera. Explain it. And if this is something you're interested in, I want to talk to you more about it. And it's super easy. It's, you know, it's been well-researched. It's healthy on you. You know, no big deal. So, all right, let's talk about this A1C, right? I sort of tee it up.
Yeah.
And then I come back to, okay, so your A1C, you know, was 6.5 6 months ago. Now it's 7. All good. We're still in the ballpark, right? Then I start having that sort of conversation with them about other things while they're thinking about it in the back of their head.
Yeah.
And then I sort of come back to it. And I think when I'm just upfront but also casual about it, the tone of my voice doesn't change when I'm talking about their diabetes or their wound or HIV or Barb having sex as a 47-year-old single cisgender woman, right? Like, and then all of a sudden Barb's like, oh, well, Dr. James is cool with this. All right. And she'll be like, well, yeah, actually I'm kind of sexually active and I've never heard of this. Oh, great. I'm going to just add it to your battery of tests. Like, no big deal, girl. We'll talk about it later. Right. Like, I think that sort of approach with folks, and I know that that's very much, it's a stylistic thing. It's very much my style and that's not everyone's style, but your tone and attitude, just like all care in that really intimate one-to-one conversation with your patients, can really, really change everything. So get a little educated and then, you know, have a nice good cup of coffee, like get the energy there and just be like, we're going to do this, right? And the more you try it, I promise you, in the first 2 to 3 conversations with patients, you're going to figure out what your style is to start integrating into the status neutral approach into your conversations with your patients.
Yeah, and like everything, it's like a learned skill. It's like the more you do, the better you'll be at it. So I tell folks, like, it's going to feel awkward the first few times, for sure, the first several times. If you haven't really integrated sexual health into your practice, having to do that is going to take some time and skill, but keep at it. And it's really important. I think one of our fellow clinical ambassadors, I think, always said it so eloquently, Dr. Oni Blackstock, that, you know, let's talk about your sexual health because it's part of your overall health. You know, your sexual health isn't this, like, you know, hut that we can ignore and we only think about, you know, at the dark of night. Like, it's part of your overall health, and we should bring it out to light and talk about it like we talk about your knee pain or your A1C or anything. It's just as important and just as cool and just as non-stigmatizing either. And I love the way that you sort of, casually in a good way talk about it, because it does reduce that stigma or pressure that, oh, this is something secretive that I need to either feel shameful about or not be able to talk to my doctors about. And really, it should be as open as you talk about anything else. And again, sexual health is more than just preventing infection, right? It's about how happy are you in sex? Like, what is your ideal sex life? And what's keeping you from having an ideal sex life? It's like asking those kind of questions, and you uncover a lot of other stuff, like intimate partner violence or even human trafficking. Like, all this other stuff comes up when you ask open-ended questions about someone's sex life. And I think just normalizing just, you know, having sex and talking about sex with your doctor is so healthy and so important. So those are awesome strategies for sure.
You will be surprised, those of you listening, Dr. Hauser, I know you, because you just brought it up, an amazing point. Yeah, you will be surprised when you open the door.
Right.
People will follow you in. Yeah. They really will. And they'll be like, oh, well, as a matter of fact, right? Like, I haven't orgasmed in 12 years. Right. Like, you, and it starts opening up these other things, and you're like, oh, well, maybe there's other, some hormonal stuff going on. Maybe then we do call endocrinology, right? Like, there's other stuff that kind of goes into it when you open up that conversation. Now, don't be scared, because I know we sometimes only have 15 minutes with our patients. Like, not to scare you clinicians, but it is really important. You're right. Cause it can open up so many other doors, and it's important for our patients to know, you really hit it on the head, that talking sexual health is not just about diseases and disease prevention.
Yeah, it's everything. All right. So, I mean, you know, let's talk about PrEP now and like sort of the nuts and bolts of it. So, you know, in December of 2021, just about a year and a half ago or so, the CDC released, you know, a much awaited update to its pre-exposure prophylaxis or PrEP guidelines. Can you tell us a little bit more about PrEP and a little bit more about this update?
Yeah, so I sort of like to just simplify PrEP very, very much so, because still a lot, there's so many clinicians who do not understand this. So there are two different pills right now. The brand names for them you will hear are Truvada and Descovy, and they are more or less around the same percentages, so I won't get into the nitty-gritty of that, but if taken as prescribed, they are 95 to 99% effective at preventing HIV through sex. There is also a shot that is every 2 months called cabotegravir, and or Apretude is what you may see it advertised as. And that shot is 97 to 99% effective at preventing HIV through sex. Full stop. That's it. It's actually not any more complicated than that. And before, we had some, you know, research-driven guidelines about who we recommended this to, right? So it was, there were trans folks were not involved for a while because we hadn't done really a robust research on trans folks. It was mostly just cisgender men who have sex with men. That then expanded to include, trans women, but only with the pills. Then it was like, okay, well, we need to study this in cisgender women, heterosexual women, and et cetera. So now it's expanded. So really this big update, the two big things are that all sexually active adults and adolescents need to have a conversation about, and we've mentioned this a couple of times, this HIV status neutral conversation. And then the update of the injectable, right? So that it was a pill before, and that second big update was that we now have the official recommendation from CDC that we can recommend cabotegravir as an injectable, because, you know, and it's a lot of the populations that I work with here in Los Angeles are a really good example, who have really, really unstable housing. There may be some difficult living situations, difficult, you know, work situations, things like that, where they just don't, like, literally don't have room to carry around a bottle of pills and then the ability to remember to take them every day. Those folks can sometimes be high risk for HIV. I know that we're trying to work on that language, but those individuals can sometimes be high risk for contracting HIV if they're HIV negative. So a shot can be a lot better for them. So the two big updates, Everybody who's sexually active, adults or adolescents, need this conversation about HIV prevention or status neutral, right? And we can explain a little bit more about that, and that we're recommending the shots as well, too.
Yeah. And I think this update was pretty powerful, and I think also recognizing the power of PrEP, right? That, it, you know, if we're really going to get to zero, if we're going to end this epidemic, you know, HIV is not just occurring in men as men. It's occurring in all populations. So all populations should have education, access, and the ability to really understand what PrEP is and how they can benefit from it. I think, you know, the guidelines made some great points about how if you as a clinician are having conversations about pregnancy planning, conversations about contraception, then PrEP should be baked into all of that. Like, if you're already having these conversations with your patients, put PrEP in there and talk about, okay, let's talk about, you know, contraception, let's talk about HIV and how these can really go hand in hand in terms of if you're thinking about preventing pregnancy, you're probably thinking about preventing HIV too. And are we thinking about sort of other sort of biomedical interventions that, that you could really benefit from? So I think, yeah, breaking these like barriers or these like buckets that CDC had before, like, okay, this is the guidelines for MSM and this is the guidelines for heterosexually active men and women. But just like breaking, like, if you're sexually active, if you're having sex, if you're on the street having sex, right? Like, you got to think about PrEP. You got to think about how PrEP can be good for you.
Yep, very much so. I think it just, it gave everyone sort of an opportunity to breathe a little bit about it, right? Because even those of us in the practice were like, okay, wait a minute, what was, this is what, you know, I'm doing with my gay men, this is what my, the transgender women that are in my practice, what about transgender men in my practice, what about straight folks, right? Like, you know, I see actually a lot of geriatric patients as well. And I was like, okay, well, rates are going up in everything in the geriatric population. Like, what do the guidelines say about my 73-year-old Barb, who is also, like, as we, you and I keep saying, out there in the streets? I shouldn't, you know, I feel like even saying that maybe stigmatizes sexuality a little bit, but I try to keep it light just to, you know, so that everyone understands it. Just like you said, this is a conversation about when you're talking about, you know, pregnancy planning and all those different things and diabetes and whatever, you just roll it in there. If you are comfortable talking about ACE inhibitors or hydrochlorothiazide and hypertension, you can be just as comfortable talking about the medications for HIV for prevention. Or if someone is, you know, HIV positive, getting them into HIV care, it really can be that simple.
Yeah. And I mean, we're making some headway, right? Like, I think the most recent data from the CDC in 2020 showed that there has been an increase in PrEP uptake, that of the 1.1 million Americans that the CDC, you know, would recommend PrEP for, we're about 25% of coverage, meaning 25% of that 1.1 million are on PrEP. But data also shows that not all people for whom PrEP is recommended are receiving it. So what are some of the biggest barriers that you feel or that you note are keeping people from receiving PrEP or maintaining up on PrEP?
Yeah, I mean, it's, if I can just, I'm going to be real with y'all, right? Black and Hispanic folks or black and brown folks account for the majority of people who PrEP is recommended for, but those same groups are also the same groups who have the lowest uptake of PrEP. And, you know, some CDC data would show that only 9% of the eligible black folks in the United States who could benefit from PrEP are receiving it. Only 16% of Hispanic folks. So we have a lot of work to do. You know, if you look at sort of the charts and the data, and everyone's starting to flatline and maybe even come down a little bit in terms of incident rates, but it's slower and not as pronounced in black and brown communities. And and that's literally why I did the work that I did in my doctoral work, because one of the things we've learned is that black and brown folks have just an inherent, but often very rational and historically accurate mistrust of the healthcare system.
Of course.
And so when having these types of conversations in a having these conversations in a community and about a topic that has already has so much stigma and has for years, and then so much of the education around HIV was from grandiose ivory towers, generally developed and researched on white folks and then delivered by white folks.
Yeah.
And then even when we started getting into queer, you know, LGBTQIA plus communities, it was the white LGBTQIA communities, right? And so, great, white gay men, rates of HIV are plummeting. It is fantastic, but they're not in other communities, and it's because the racism baked into the healthcare system and all of those things that we know. And so what I'm really, you know, proud of as a together ambassador and the CDC is the CDC is recognizing this. They're also recognizing that the errors that they've made in the past and saying, we got to fix it. We got to try to do it better. And which is why people like you and I, Dr. Hazra, who are clinical ambassadors, we look and sound like the communities that we're trying to serve, right? Yeah. And we are intimate in those communities. And it's and having these things like, let's stop categorizing everyone and all these different types of conversations. Like, wherever you are, wherever you are getting your care, if you are sexually active, it is time to have this sort of status neutral conversation. And then that's how we start breaking down these barriers and really getting to the communities and, more importantly, with the communities to make change in those communities.
Yeah, I think it really has to be, you know, I think we've been trying the top-down approach for a long time, saying like, hey, this is what the studies show, this is what the CDC says, now you do it. Like, we know that does not work. It has to be a bottom-up approach. You need community people that look like you saying, this is what I'm on, this is able to openly talk about HIV, openly talk about being tested for HIV. Like, forget even PrEP at this point, like trying to get, you know, Black and brown folks to even talk about going to get HIV testing done and normalizing that to begin with. And then from there, building from, you know, these community roots and building from a bottom-up approach, I think is exactly what the CDC is trying to do and what, you know, we're trying to do too. You know, for, you know, clinicians at neighborhood health clinics where, you know, you have a lot of community trust with your patients and your patient panel, you know, really well because they come to see you and you're working, you know, and you're living in these communities, you talking about PrEP, it means so much more than the director of the CDC, you know, making a statement about PrEP or some, you know, commercial on television talking about PrEP. It's like, as you as a clinician, you're such a trusted source to your patient. And what you say is so important. And if you're able to distill this information to them in ways that Dr. Simmons is saying, I think it's so important and such a powerful way to really uptake PrEP in these priority populations of people who need it and who need to feel comfortable with this information and digest it themselves before they feel okay with committing with to such a prevention strategy.
And that, you know, before committing, you make such a great point. It, like a lot of things that we do with our patients, this takes time. So your first conversation with someone, even about getting an HIV test, might not have the outcome you want it to have, right? Yeah. You're going to be like, hey, I need to get tested for HIV. It's super easy. No more stigma, blah, blah, blah. And your patient might look at you like you are crazy, like, right? This is going to take a couple of conversations. Exactly. It's going to take, or like, you know, a lot of times you know, like as a nurse practitioner, you know, I'm fairly autonomous in the hospital system, but in the clinic setting, you know, I kind of have a physician partner and some people like the physician partner way more than me. And some people like me way more than her. So sometimes I'm not the right person to have that conversation, but at least teeing it up so that the next time the patient comes in and they're getting that A1C checked again or that wound checked again or whatever, then you're having the conversation. And they're like, you know, Dr. Simmons said something about that last time. I've been thinking about this. Right. So just know that this, particularly in priority populations, Black and brown folks, particularly younger, there might be some very, very well understood and rational resistance, but it's still worth the conversation because it really does start then those folks talking to their trusted sources in the community. And then being like, okay, well, actually, my minister and my neighbor and my auntie all know about HIV and have gotten tests, so maybe I should too, right? That's how that sort of process works.
Another, speaking of priority populations, another one is our young people. So people, you know, age 16 to 24 are now the least likely to be using PrEP. And some prelim CDC data shows that only 16% of this population for whom PrEP is recommended were actually prescribed it in 2020, compared to, you know, 27% or 30% of older folks, like 35 to 34 or 35 to 44. I laugh.
Careful saying older. I know. Watch out now.
I don't like being categorized as older.
Same, right?
But what we're seeing is that PrEP is not getting to young folks, and this is obviously a huge issue because I think people sometimes assume young folks maybe are not as sexually active as maybe some of folks who are maybe a decade or so older. But I think it's really important to be thinking about young folks as a priority population for this intervention. Do you have any strategies of how you talk to younger populations about PrEP or about HIV prevention or sexual health in general?
You know, it's really interesting with younger folks. I'm finding that these younger generations are way more open in a casual kind of way about this, rather than it being you know, oh, okay, I'm going to sit down with you. We're going to have this conversation about sex. This might be a little bit uncomfortable. Maybe your parents did this before or blah, blah, blah. There is almost, I hate to use this word almost, but there's a laissez-faire-ness mm-hmm. with some of my younger patients about like, oh yeah, yeah, I dated someone who had HIV a few years ago. Like no big deal. Like it is completely different for them. Yeah. And it's almost a little bit shocking to me that I'm like, oh, you did? Yeah. Were you on PrEP? Do you know about this? Now, sometimes the answer has been no, right? Yeah. No, wait, what's PrEP? But there's a lot less stigma about sex in general. There's a lot less stigma about who they are having sex with, right? There's this fluidity that is really lovely and wonderful, but also because this generation is so much more sex positive, I have found that there's a lot more sex happening. But still the amount of folks who are, you know, for whatever reason, not using barrier protection or kind of intermittent with PrEP, they sort of understand it. Maybe they got on it a couple of years ago, but they still have a bottle left from 6 months ago, that sort of thing. And so that to me actually requires a little bit of an assessment. So sometimes, you know, a younger person, I just might be like, hey, you know, there's the pill out there that will prevent HIV 99% of the time through sex, right? You've heard of this? Yeah, I heard something about it. Oh, great. Have you been on it? Do you know anyone about it? Right. Yeah. I just start to have that type of conversation with them to sort of assess where they are and you know, really, really tease that out, because it does feel to me like a much different conversation now with younger folks than it was earlier in my career.
Of course. And I think that is like the value of PrEP the past decade, that it's been mm-hmm. able to, I think, make folks be able to have sex without this fear of HIV around them. And I think mm-hmm. that's, you know, I think something that you and I grew up with is just not there currently, which is amazing. And I am so happy for the younger generations that are able to experience that. At the same time, they need to recognize the benefit of PrEP and if mm-hmm. you know and of how they would benefit from it. You know, what I find is exactly the same, that they're very open to talk about sex, about, you know, their sexual behaviors and how they are open to you know, being on PrEP, but it's getting them to come back for appointments or having them mm-hmm. re-engaged and whatnot ends up being a bit more challenging, because I just think young people in general, and this is across the board, tend to feel more invincible, right? That they are not thinking about, you know, their prevention, you know, health prevention, you know, 10, 20, 30 years from now. They're just thinking about the moment, which is what young people do. And I think trying to figure out some, you know, key strategies and communication that really help target young people to think about, hey, let's think about your overall health in general. And again, these conversations about sexual health and understanding, you know, a better understanding of how to best serve your sexual health on a broader scale, I think is helpful. I think we still have a lot of work to be done to help engage young people into HIV prevention services like PrEP itself. And the last population that the CDC mentions is really cisgender women, right? That who represent now 19% of new HIV diagnoses, but remain sort of left behind in a lot of the PrEP discussions and the PrEP rollout. How has your experience with cis women and PrEP been?
Very slow. Yeah. Very slow. And I think that's, you know, the tiny history of this is, right, that the I think rightfully so, the targeting of HIV prevention initiatives was generally on cisgender gay men, right? For good reason. And then the research took time to catch up with cisgender women, right? So the organizations like the CDC could not come out and say, like, we support Truvada and or Descovy or now cabotegravir for cisgender straight women because we haven't really finished the research, right? Yeah. We're still analyzing the data. Well, now the data's there. It's really robust. It's great. So the conversation is just that many years behind, right? And so I don't think it's a... You know, it's not necessarily a bad thing, but I do find those conversations, when they happen, to tend to be very fruitful, right? Tend to be very, like, cisgender sexually active women tend to be like, wait, what?
Yeah.
It's almost like, why hasn't somebody told me about this?
Exactly.
And it's often couched in a maybe a birth control conversation too.
Yeah.
Or, you know, a patient recently had high blood pressure, and so we needed to remove the estrogen from her, you know, birth control panel. And so we went just with the progesterone sort of situation. And during that, this was with a colleague, but I was like, is she on PrEP? Like, you need to, don't forget to ask.
Yeah.
And she came out and was standing in the like lobby area and was like, I cannot believe nobody ever told me about this.
Yeah.
Like, you're kidding me. I just need to take a pill and, you know, get my labs checked every few months. And you're telling me I'm not going to get HIV. Like, why is this taking so long? That's the energy that I get a little bit more often. I think particularly with cisgender women who are a little bit more used to maybe at least talking about reproductive health. And so sometimes you can couch the sneak the HIV conversation in there if you need to.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's, I think, you know, a lot of folks are trying to do the work now of catch up and trying to figure out how strategies of reaching cis women and how to think of it. It's a difference. It's not a one size fits all, right? Like you can't use the same strategies that we've used for, you know, cisgender gay men and PrEP with cis women. Like it needs to be couched, like you mentioned, like in reproductive health, right? In this sort of setting of thinking about, let's talk about pregnancy, let's talk about HIV, let's talk about your other STIs, even in folks that are pregnant, if they're, you know, developing STI or whatnot, that should automatically talk about PrEP at that point, you know, thinking about them as a population and then understanding what are their needs and concerns, right? So, and those are not always the same as every other priority population. And I think this is where, you know, our OB-GYN colleagues can really be helpful as sort of backup in this. And you know, they're already a trusted source for a lot of sexual health questions that come up amongst their cisgender female patients and rolling out PrEP in that setting could be, you know, really successful potentially as well.
Very, very much so. I think it's really important to you highlighted this statistic, but I really want everyone listening to hear this, that this might help frame your mind around conversations with cisgender women, straight women having conversations about PrEP, that 19% of new HIV diagnoses were in cisgender straight women who need this medication, right? We can prevent those. That number can be zero. Like we have the science for that now, and we can talk about U equals U, which is really my jam, but that we can talk about HIV prevention and PrEP with these individuals because we need to, because that statistic can actually be zero. So this is where we sort of go into like, hey, everybody gets a conversation about PrEP, right? Yeah. About like HIV, starting with HIV testing. And then if you're negative, we're having a conversation about PrEP. If you're positive, we're having a conversation about getting you into care. It's that simple.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's that goes into sort of talking about how can, you know, we can work as an interdisciplinary clinical team to reduce barriers when it comes to HIV prevention. You know, Dr. Simmons, you summarized a little bit about, you know, the updates and the new guidelines about all sexually active adults and adolescents, you know, talking to them about PrEP and offering PrEP to anyone who would ask them, even if they don't technically meet, quote unquote, the criteria in the tables. Tell us a little bit more about the roles that nurse practitioners and nursing in general can potentially take or support in the setting of HIV screening and prevention measures.
You know, I think we've been talking a lot about this individual conversation about whoever your primary care provider is having with the patient in the room. And that's great. But as we know, that is not where healthcare, that visit begins or ends, right? Yeah. So I think if you start to incorporate things like literally in the emails that go out to your patients and you're talking about, oh, we're going to check your A1C and we're going to check a CBC and a chem panel and all of these things and an HIV test. And it starts to become normalized, right? And your staff is talking about you. And it's part of the general questioning when the MA does labs. It's part of the general questioning. A lot of emergency departments are doing this now, like just almost front to back, people are getting HIV testing in the right scenario, I guess. Right. And normalizing it into your conversation, including, you know, there's such a dearth of primary care providers in a lot of places in the United States, particularly in the Southeast.
Yeah.
And so nurse practitioners are doing a bang up job of filling that primary care role. And this is where it is all about empowering nurse practitioners and PAs as really stepping up and filling in these roles of lack of primary care providers. As you are coming into practice, as you are changing your practice and updating your practice constantly, it is on us to incorporate this status neutral HIV conversation into our care with patients. And so this is not just like, oh, the attending physician on service this week wants us all to talk about HIV. Like, no. Like we all can do it.
Yeah.
And that's where I go back to this imposter syndrome a little bit, right? Like sometimes an RN might feel uncomfortable talking about, hey, did you know that there's a pill that, you know, prevents HIV? No, you should be. The MA should be the receptionist. Yeah. I feel like everybody. EVS should be comfortable talking about this. Like, hey, I'm on PrEP too, right? Like this is not... There's no gatekeeping with this conversation and there's no gatekeeping with the data, right? You don't have to have a certain number types of letters before or after your name to have the conversation with people that we care about and that we're trying to serve around HIV prevention. So this is a more is more as better scenario. Yeah.
No, I mean, exactly. And I like, you know, not to be like cliche, but it really takes a village, right? It just, it can't just be on, it can't just be on providers alone. It really is everyone that comes in contact with a patient in the clinic, having them understand what PrEP is, being able to, or not even just PrEP, but HIV testing, you know, to offer that at all levels, I think is really important because like you mentioned, you know, providers, physicians, nurse practitioners, PAs, we all have very limited amount of time with the patient. So a lot of other people come in contact with the patient during that visit, and being able to, you know, potentially leverage those interactions as well to help increase HIV screening rates and PrEP conversations, the better. It's like, you know, we all can work on this really together.
Very much so. Agreed.
Yeah. So, I mean, and then, you know, I just want to talk a little bit about sort of some of the new changes sort of for clinicians specifically in the guidelines. So, Dr. Simmons, you spoke about sort of the changes in the characteristics and in the pools of people that we should be thinking about PrEP for in terms of all sexually active adults and adolescents. And there are some changes specifically around screening guidelines and specifically to thinking about follow-up, initial and follow-up STI screening. I think, you know, I am big, and so are you, Dr. Simmons, with the idea of a syndemic and understanding that HIV does not travel alone. HIV, you know, travels with other communicable diseases in general. And, and if you're screening someone for HIV, you should be screening them for syphilis, for gonorrhea, and the chlamydia as well. And, you know, while you're doing one, do all. And that's where the guidelines really say that, you know, when you're doing an initial visit for PrEP, you're screening them for HIV, but you should be screening them for syphilis, gonorrhea, chlamydia, for all adults prescribed PrEP at the initial visit as well as their follow-up. And follow-up testing may vary by population, but in general, this idea of demedicalizing PrEP. I think for the past decade, you know, when PrEP first came around, we were very like nervous, like, oh my God, we got to check kidney function like all the time, like what's going to happen? And it's been around for a decade now. And we recognize that no, people's kidneys are just fine. And we don't need to be sticking them every 3 months and checking a creatinine. That for the majority of folks, a yearly creatinine check is all they need for their safety labs. And really thinking about, you know, unlearning some of these over-testing that we've been doing. But the one thing that you can never over-test, I'll say, is STI screening. So continue doing that every 3 months is remains sort of the main guideline.
And sometimes it's a nuanced conversation, right? Sometimes it's a, okay, so, you know, oh, hey, you were on PrEP. Are you still taking your PrEP? You know, when someone's reviewing your medications or, you know, the MA or whoever does it before and they're reviewing the medications and you might pop up and see on your screen, oh, they actually haven't taken their Truvada in, you know, however many months or whatever. A lot of times, like with all of our patients, how you ask the question is more important than what you're asking. Yeah. So why aren't you taking your Truvada? Like, what's wrong with you? You know, like it can't be that approach. But in people who you see, oh, haven't been able to take your Truvada, like, is there a way I can get it to you easier? Did you know about that there's a shot actually? Exactly. People are like, oh no, I ran out. I didn't want to go get labs, blah, blah, blah. Like it's usually something just life gets in the way. Yeah. But those folks, it is really important that you retest for HIV because, you know, if the, you know, there's a few cases where someone has, you know, seroconverted, you know, right after finishing PrEP, then they start again, you can build resistance, things like that. So it is really important for folks who have sort of start and stopped with PrEP, who come back in and want to get started on it again, that you rescreen for HIV.
Yeah, exactly. Sort of restarting the book and you're rescreening them. And for oral PrEP, you know, the screening for HIV remains, the antigen antibody test, the routine sort of, you know, fourth generation test that you send off in your lab. What's nice, you know, that the CDC was forward thinking and included a lot of guidance around the injectable options like cabotegravir or apretude, like Dr. Simmons said. And for the HIV screening test for apretude or cabotegravir is a little bit different. It's actually sending a viral load or a quantitative HIV RNA test or what we colloquially call an HIV viral load. And that's just because that seems to be the better test to detect HIV and any potential breakthroughs or seroconversions that happen on the long-acting injections. And I think those are the two big differences between the oral PrEP option and the injectable PrEP option in terms of HIV surveillance. But overall, I mean, giving people more options makes them more empowered to take care of themselves. And like you said, Dr. Simmons, if someone is on and off PrEP because they're like, I just can't take a pill, like, or like, I feel nauseated with that pill, or I just don't want to remember to have to take something out of my bottle all the time. Well, yeah, do you know there's an injection that's studied in all people, you know, so that you can, you know, that yeah, that you can get every 2 months. And the future of PrEP is so, it's so bright. There's so many cool stuff coming down the pipeline. In the next 3 to 5 years, I'm super excited about sort of these other options that are going to be hopefully available to patients sooner than later.
Yeah, like the once yearly that they're working on right now. Yeah. Oh my gosh, to me that just is, I'm like, that is a complete game changer. Yeah. I'm just literally going to take a sign. I'm going to go out in the streets and I'm just going to be like, everyone come with me.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do it once a year on the same day. We're
prep day. It's just, it's like your birthday shot or something. Yeah. I mean, it's
honestly, right.
Yeah. It's just, I think, you know, again, giving people more options and more ways of taking care of their sexual health, I think is so important. And I think, you know, we, thinking about sort of clinical care, I think you can leverage PrEP in getting folks in the door. I think so many people that we prescribe PrEP for would otherwise never see a primary care provider. And so thinking about, you know, if people are coming to see you for PrEP, you can start thinking about these other primary care conditions that young people may have not been coming to you to see before. So thinking about, you know, screening for other conditions like STIs, obviously, but also mental health disorders, nicotine, drug use, et cetera, even hypertension. Like, you know, I can tell you so many of, you know, young men in my clinic that would probably have never known they were hypertensive for years if they weren't coming in for their PrEP visits, and being able to now provide holistic, comprehensive primary care to them that you wouldn't have able to otherwise potentially gotten on maybe for another decade or so.
And it just builds that relationship, right? It just really, people come to know you and trust you and really respect what you're saying. And so then when things like, hey, I can convert, move you over to the shot now, or when this yearly shot comes out and you start to recommend it, they'll believe it, right? Or if you're like, hey, this blood pressure medication isn't working, I'm going to switch it to this one. Like those types of conversations really, really are so fruitful in developing that relationship and that rapport with your patients.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, so obviously we're talking how PrEP is such an important prevention tool. How can clinicians connect to individuals to this resource, especially in communities where access to providers who are experts in this may not be as easy? You know, how do you bridge that gap?
Drive around in a big bus and tell everybody, come on, let's. I wish that was the case. You know, again, I mentioned this earlier, but NPs and even RNs in general are really helping expanding care. You know, I'm in California, and so there's a lot of, we don't have full practice authority yet, really. It's really coming next year. But the ability for nurse practitioners to be not only educated about this, but fill in the gaps where there are, you know, there's not as much access to care is really important. I also think it's really important for clinicians across the board to just sort of know that there are resources out there, by the way. So you've listened to this podcast and it's been great, but CDC is like your best friend when it comes to this. And you can read the 208-page long PrEP update if you want to, and you can read the 3-page long update. There's a website called CDC Nexus, N-E-X-U-S. I'm just gonna throw it out there. Just Google CDC Nexus. Maybe throw in the word HIV. Google CDC HIV Nexus, and there is a whole clinical resource that is there for you that is amazing. In fact, one of my students the other day in the hospital was like, we have this guy in the hospital, and he's really interested in PrEP. And I'm like, well, we can't start him here, but let's send him to the right clinic. And she's like, well, I want to know. I want to give him all this information. And so I sent her there, and she was like, oh, my God, I had no idea all of this existed. It's fantastic. So, of course, I made her do a presentation about it. But that's another conversation. So it's really amazing, the CDC Nexus. And there are quick guides about PrEP. There's, you know, supplemental guides about each of the two oral medications, as well as cabotegravir, which is the shot. You know, the testing that Dr. Hazard went over earlier, you know, how you step someone through those things, how you get them started, what the routine care looks like, as well as things like on the CDC website. You know, there's PrEP finders, right? So if your patients are like, I don't know where to go, or they don't really want to talk to you about it, but they might be interested, you can just be like, hey, there are ways to go find PrEP. There's actually ways to go find HIV care, like ART therapy, if you are HIV positive, those really, really exist on the CDC website. So for us clinicians, it's specifically called CDC Nexus.
Yeah. And again, amazing, like you mentioned, toolkits that are available and even PowerPoint presentations. So if you want to start teaching people in your practice about it, if you want to be a champion for PrEP in your practice, you can sort of download these slide decks and they're all there for you, all done, made by the experts of the CDC that you're able to just then present at your grand rounds or whatever teaching didactics that you have that you would want to teach your colleagues about. I think, you know, it makes your life so much easier. The Nexus is so intuitive and really easy to use. And I think I can't recommend it to clinicians enough at all.
Yeah, they actually just redesigned it. It was super fun. Or I think we got the scoop here on the podcast.
Maybe No. I think it is redesigned. Yeah.
Did it come out? Right. Okay, yeah. The redesign just came out. Yeah. That's right. It looks great. There's like screening toolkits. There's literally a checklist for you. So you can just like go on there and print it out if you're old school like me, but look at the checklist and be like, okay, I want to start someone on PrEP. Never done this before. Let me go through the checklist. Okay. Here's also materials to give to my patients, quick guides for things and how to have these conversations. Like we've been talking about, if you're a more visual person or you want to read it, brochures for patients, all this kind of stuff. You can download it from CDC Nexus. You can save it. You can go back to it. They update them all the time. And one of the things that I do love, Dr. Hazard, as you mentioned, there's already put together slideshows for you.
Exactly.
So if you want to do that presentation, you're like, all right, I got one. Let me just go print it out 5 minutes before my meeting. And here we go.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Simmons, for joining us on this conversation about PrEP and reducing barriers to HIV care and prevention. Please, for those listening, visit PrimeMed's website as well as cdc.gov/stophivtogether for more HIV resources and information. Thank you all for joining us today and hope you have a great one.